This is Anna Karmu with UN News. The announcement that the UN World Food Programme, or WFP, has won the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize is being described as an amazing day for its workers in the field who put their lives on the line to help at-risk communities. That's the message from Matthew Allingdale, head of the agency's South Sudan operation. In his interview with UN News' Daniel Johnson, he's been explaining how the 1,200-strong humanitarian team there has been helping communities hit by the worst flooding in decades and ongoing violence.
So we're thrilled today to have received the Nobel Peace Prize for 2020. There are 1,250 World Food Programme staff working in South Sudan, trying to alleviate hunger for and feed more than 5 million people a year. And clearly South Sudan for the World Food Programme is one of our most complex operations, a country that's faced decades of violence, but is also having to manage an economic downturn, COVID-19, locust infestation, more violence which continues persistently, and now more recently floods that have affected more than 800,000 people. So for all of WFP in South Sudan, a country where we work very hard to demonstrate the link between violence and hunger and try and stop that link, break that that relationship so that we can actually change people's lives for the better in the future. For us, this is just an amazing day.
It is certainly excellent news for the agency and for the more than 1,200 workers on the ground, as you say. Maybe you could give me some insight into what they're doing, not just in terms of the emergency following the devastating flooding that you've had, which has been the worst in decades. I remember you briefing us just a couple of weeks ago on this, but also in terms of the development projects on the ground to help resilience for when these communities can go home.
So in South Sudan, clearly there is a massive emergency portfolio of work, given the enormity of the food insecurity problem that the country faces. And only in the last 5 years, we've faced 31 pockets of famine. It gives you an idea about how significant the problem is here. But it's not the only problem that we need to face. And it's not, an emergency response is not the only tool in our toolbox. So obviously, what we're also trying to do in South Sudan is really be the poster child for bringing emergency response, development activities, and peace-building activities together as one. And part of that, obviously, is to change the fundamental problems that are faced by so many South Sudanese citizens, the issues of isolation, the issues of inequality and inequity, and marginalization, all of which creates the breeding ground for conflict and violence. So through our programs, where we are supporting rural farmers to be more productive, to have enough food for their own communities, but more importantly, to create a surplus that they can trade with other communities, to link those communities together, to link farmers to markets and other markets, and thereby creating a positive relationship across ethnic divides, across community divides, so that we can actually bring people together. And these are the activities that we want to invest more in. These are the activities that are recognized, I think, in this Peace Prize today. And obviously, it's not just South Sudan where we're doing these things, but also, you know, fundamentally, desperately trying to ensure that those that would manipulate, those that can and have manipulated in the past, are held accountable so that this can change in South Sudan. It's a country that, frankly, we've been in for 50 years too long. And if we're going to make sure that we are not needed in this country, we've got to make those linkages between development, aid, and peace building.
And obviously, we wish you all the very best with that and your teams in very difficult circumstances. Millions have been experiencing displacement and conflict. Just last week, the Human Rights Council highlighted a report that talked about the use of starvation as a weapon of war. We've heard even worse than that, soldiers being offered the chance to rape women in communities in lieu of payment. I mean, you just can't imagine the kind of conditions. But when you go into a community with the WFP banner, what is it that the agency brings? What is the agency's added value?
So in South Sudan, because we've built relationships with communities over decades of presence here, because we are, you know, a 1,200 plus strong organization with presence across all 10 states and a deep sort of relationship with the communities we serve, we're a known entity. We have the logistics tools in our toolbox to be able to access areas with helicopters, planes, all-terrain vehicles, canoes, barges, boats, you name it, we have it. And in doing so, we're able to meet people's needs when they're at the worst, but we're also able to support organizations, other organizations, as well as community leaders themselves to make a difference in their communities. So what we are, from our perspective, able to do is genuinely try and act at times as a facilitator to bring organizations, to bring communities together that typically have had problems coming together. You know, this country since 2011, since its own independence, has gone through two vicious periods of civil war and has persistent subnational conflict, local conflict. What WFP has is now trying to do is trying to ensure that our food security presence, it can be used by other partners, because we're not in this on our own, to really facilitate a change in this environment and a fundamental change in what is causing and enabling violence to continue.
One of the other things that the Nobel Committee was saying was that there's a chance, and I think what WFP said it, there's a chance of 265 million starving people within a year because of the COVID crisis. How have you managed to withstand the initial shock of COVID-19? I don't know, maybe in terms of pre-positioning, but that's not always easy. And what's your sort of outlook for the coming months as COVID shows no signs of going away?
I mean, COVID-19 added to the sort of long list of threats faced by citizens in South Sudan, a long list of health problems, but a long list also in terms of other factors that damage their ability to be prosperous and peaceful. What we tried to do, as always, is be somewhat ahead of the game, recognizing that COVID-19 would limit potentially our traveling abilities, our access abilities in the country. So we pre-positioned people, we pre-positioned emergency teams before any lockdowns came into place, and we pre-positioned food and other materials in our field offices so that when COVID-19 started to have an impact on our ability to move, we actually had people closer to those we serve and away from the big hubs and the capital city. So over the last 8-9 months, we've still been able to maintain our operations. We've still been able to maintain our monthly distributions. But obviously, that only goes so far. Our biggest threat right now moving forward is that clearly COVID-19 hasn't gone away. It's impacting global economies now, not just the economies of countries like South Sudan. It may, in fact, have an impact on the resources we need. This year's flooding, for example, means that the lean season in South Sudan hasn't ended because of harvests, because harvests have been entirely lost. Cultivated lands have been entirely swamped by the floods. And with this situation, it means that we're going to have to continue to support people from this year up until next year's harvest season, which is more than doubling what we would normally have to do. And the resources are going to be scant. That's the reality. So we do need to recognize that right now, South Sudan, already a fragile nation, already a fragile and one of the newest nations in the world, needs to have consistent resources, not just for the World Food Programme, but across the UN and humanitarian community, so that we don't lose what we've gained. It's really been hard won since the end of the last hot phase of the civil war. Because otherwise, again, we will really be losing far too much. There's not a community that doesn't recognize that the foundation of development, the foundation of prosperity will be peace. And that goes for food security as well.
When you talk to communities and you also have to deal with state and non-state actors, how do you get them to give access so that you can get in there? What's the key to it? What's your first line of discussion with them?
I mean, every warrior, every armed youth, every soldier, every general has a mother and a father, has relatives. And, they know that where they come from is probably suffering as well from food insecurity, poverty, instability and conflict. So they need and they recognize the need that we have access across the country. Clearly, however, what's important in all of this is trying to ensure that they recognize that they have a role to play in enabling our access, in enabling us to wean people off any kind of dependence on aid and build a sustainable and productive society. So one part of our role through our sort of our conflict analysis and access units is to get access. The other part is to actually change the minds and change the reality for those that are picking up weapons to recognize that the better way forward is actually to support their communities to be prosperous and actually not look at armed conflict as the means to make a living, but look at other productive ways to improve their society, to improve their economy, to improve their own lives.
Very last question to you. The fact that 265 million people risk starving within a year around the world must be totally frightening to you. But you're not working on your own, thank goodness. You have many other partners. What kind of reaction to not just COVID, but this is really linked to COVID, have you seen from multilateralism, from international cooperation? Because it really is, some would say, experiencing an existential crisis at the moment.
Here in South Sudan, we have phenomenal partnerships across the international community, as well as across national organizations here to serve their own citizens, here to serve the people of South Sudan. WFP has 74 partners who cooperate with us in trying to reach those who are furthest behind in South Sudan. And those partners are, I believe, working harder than ever to try and resolve the issue that 6.5 million people in South Sudan face, which is emergency and acute hunger. Now, across the world, the numbers are far bigger. 690 million people are hungry today. The vast majority of that 690 million people are hungry because of conflict. 10 out of 13 of our largest operations in the world are our largest operations because of violence and conflict creating food insecurity. COVID-19 makes it worse, but it's part and parcel of the same issue, because those areas that are facing hunger, bottom line, it's violence which has really created the problems in the first place. We need to continue to do what we're doing, but we also need to ensure that the world doesn't forget that, you know, global safety, global security, global stability also will bring about a change in the economy for the better as we move out of COVID-19. We need to put an end to conflict. As our executive director is always saying, there's only one vaccine that seems to be working right now, and that's food. If we want to beat the hunger problem, and if we want to indeed change the reality of instability in so many countries around the world.